When I go and photograph whales, I don't ever go in with like, I must get this shot because it's nature. It's a good exercise in working with whatever is available. And you also have to take into account the animal's welfare and that it wants to be there or wants you to be there. And so if you go in with this, like, I must get this shot, then often what happens is you might push boundaries and you don't want to disturb nature. It's one of the main things when you're doing wildlife photography is to minimize your impact and disturbance.
Hey, welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast brought to you by CloudSpot, the easiest way to deliver and sell your photos online. I'm your host, Raymond Hadfield, and each week I interview one of the world's most interesting photographers to learn what it really takes to capture beautiful images and compelling stories so that you can start to do the same. Today is an episode from the BPP Vault where we revisit this treasure trove of interviews to offer both new and longtime listeners a chance to uncover the powerful insights and practical tips to enhance your photography skills. Whether you're listening with fresh ears or a new perspective, there is always something new to learn. In today's interview, we are chatting with wildlife conservation photographer Kareem Ilya about using a camera to capture the beauty of the ocean's largest creatures. Now, Kareem has a really unique perspective that many of us just don't have because of the barrier to entry in bringing your camera underwater around large animals. So I think in the same way that, you know, when you hear astronauts talk about how life-changing it is to see the Earth from space and how connected everything is, we get a similar sense from, you know, chatting with Kareem, where it's just like so hard to imagine what this looks like, you know. So hearing him talk about not only being underwater at depth, but like photographing the world's largest creatures up close is amazing. Now, most of us have, again, no way to imagine the scale and experience that. So hearing his story is really fascinating. And then for him to have like the wherewithal to actually like use his camera with a level of proficiency is truly wild. So I really want you to pay extra attention to the way that Kareem talks about light in this interview, because it sounds really cool. And again, something that most of us will never experience. So with that, let's go ahead and get on into today's interview with Kareem Ilya. Kareem, you have won the Marine Conservation Photographer of the Year for 2021. You've worked with brands like DJI and Hasselblad. You're clearly an accomplished photographer today. I want you to take me back to those early days. When did you know that photography was going to play an important role in your life?
I think I started to figure out that it was going to be something that I did more when people started paying me money. I wasn't yet at a point where I was sure of what I was going to do. I was in, I think, the beginning of university and college, and it just seemed like a bonus. I thought, oh, this is cool. This is nice. People are paying me money to do this, and maybe I can keep doing this. Until then, it was just a matter of taking photos because I love taking photos, and that's always been the primary focus. I spend a lot of time doing personal projects, things that I come up with, and pursuing something that I want to photograph. And then from that, you know, I just hope and assume that work will come as a result of people seeing that. And so then I do work to be able to put that money back into photography. So it's just keep bringing the money and putting it right back into it. So
what about those earlier days, though? Because obviously, I think you started off there saying that people started paying you for photography. How did it start before that? You said that you like just taking pretty pictures, but has there ever been any sort of intention, or were you just taking snapshots?
I got a little point and shoot camera, one of those. It was a 4-megapixel Casio Exilum, just like a tiny little thing. I mean, these days your phone is much better than those cameras were, but at the time it was pretty mind blowing. A friend had come visit. He'd come to visit from Korea, and their technology was pretty far advanced at the time. And so I just used this little camera and took photos of friends, of whatever I could find, skateboarding, little bugs, trees, not very good photos, but just kept doing it and kept doing it until, I said, well, I'd like a bigger camera that can do a little bit more, shoot low light, do slow exposures, take faster photos, make blurry backgrounds, shoot closer up, and just kept doing that. And, spending as much time as I could photographing whatever nature that was, whether that was, a cat or a lizard or a bird. And eventually that just kept going. And I was really enjoying that and shooting also as a way to remember things, because you can look at a photo and not just remember that moment, but remember the moments around it, right? Like, oh, that friend was wearing that thing because we went to this place, and then after that, we got this food. Do you remember? So it can bring back a whole group of memories from just seeing a photo. And I found that to be a nice way to kind of look back and show my perspective of the world, but also to kind of log my life a bit. And I'm not so artistically inclined when it comes to painting or drawing. My handwriting is abysmal. So photography, yeah, it's hard. I can play video games. I'm very good at those, but the mechanical skills of writing or drawing and bringing something from my head and putting it onto paper is and was difficult. And so I found photography an art form, a release of art that I could do by looking at something. And that was interesting to be able to, that's really what people sometimes get bogged down by, what camera and how do you use a camera? I don't know how to use a camera, but really what it is looking at something from a particular angle. And, it makes a difference here or down here. And then pressing buttons, and people learn how to drive cars. People learn how to fly planes and do accounting and all of these other complicated things. Operating a camera is not that difficult. Like, anybody can learn how to do it. And so it just becomes a matter of, you see the thing, you're like, that looks great. And then your brain, once you know how to use the camera, it does what it needs to do. And you figure out the controls and you can take a photo. And the amazing thing is that these days you just see it immediately. So you can make adjustments. And that was my style of photography. I think I would not have done well in the old days where you got to bring out, pieces of paper and start doing calculations for light and how it's going to be. For me, it was just take a photo. This looks terrible. How do I make it? I need to make it brighter. I need to go closer. This thing doesn't look good. Let me move the camera a little bit. Adjust, look at it. And that feedback loop let me refine photos as I took them until I was happy with something. And that was my main process of learning, was just doing it a ton and seeing what comes out. And then when you show someone and they're like, wow, that's cool, that's encouraging. And so then you go and you photograph more of it. And it becomes a vehicle for you to explore the world in so many ways, whether that's through people and photos of, your local community, whether that's through nature. People go out to photograph birds, and in the process, they see all kinds of things. They spend time in nature. They, spend time in the snow with the sunlight coming through and the rain, and they, learn more about themselves and they learn more about nature. And all of that started because they wanted to go get a photo of a bird. And that's a pretty amazing thing to realize that it can take you places and show you things. And that was, I realized that photography was allowing me to see things that I otherwise wouldn't have seen, either because of a job or because just motivation, right? If the light's good, you're like, I gotta go. The light's good. I should go and utilize it and take photos. And then that opens up a whole new world, and you see things and you meet people and you go places.
So you said earlier there, when you were starting in photography, you would just shoot and adjust. Photography is kind of a world where there's a lot of technical jargon, I guess, right? So early on, if you don't know
the terms, what specifically is wrong with an image, you notice it with your eyes. Oh, this photo's too dark here, right? And we know as working photographers that, oh, you need to raise your exposure up. But in the beginning, if you're just doing, you know, point and shoot, click, let the camera get it, how do you learn? How did you learn to be able to control your camera? How did you learn photography?
Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
It took a long time. I actually didn't know what shutter speed was, which for those listening who don't know what shutter speed, don't worry about it. No, it's the amount of time that the photo is being taken for. So it's like the camera opens and closes, or you can open and then close and let in light over time that builds up. And I didn't know what that was. Some of it was just looking at it and being like, what is this thing? Once it got to a point where I was like, I don't know what this is and why it's doing this. You know, your instruction manual won't really tell you, but it's a good place to start. The nice thing is now we have the internet and people making YouTube videos that are some of them really long, some of them really short. You know, what is shutter speed? But I try, and when people ask me about starting photography, I try and encourage them to not get bogged down with the technical components, because you can lose interest quickly if you start with that. For me, it was more when it got to a point where I needed more and was ready for more, then I was like, okay, what is this thing? And it took months, maybe even a few years, because I was a teenager before I figured out what aperture was. I just looked at this number and I was like, I don't know what this is, but it's probably not important, right?
Arguably still, one of the most important, but yeah.
Yeah. And I still do that. I mean, even today, of course, I know a lot more about how it works, but I have friends who tell me things, you know, that are photographers, and they're like, ah, you really shouldn't go above this ISO or this level of, and I'm like, oh, I had no idea. So, you know, still learning all the time. That's one way to do it. Another way to do it for some people, it really works to get into the technical components of it and learn. And if that's what you like, then by all means, it's just, it's good to remember that, you know, your camera also does a lot of automatic things for you. So you can start in full auto mode, which is basically what your phone does. And then you can cut out those automatic functions as you see fit till you get to a comfortable level. And of course, there are some purists who, you know, they want to manually focus and do everything manual. I do not do everything manually. I guess I've been doing photography for something like 15, 16, 17 years. And my thought process is let the camera do as much as it can, as long as I'm still in control. So shutter speed, for example, I do not use manual shutter and manual aperture, right? I still let the camera do things automatically and then monitor to make sure that it is within the range of what I want it to do, or is acceptable, or doesn't make a difference. I don't know if we're getting too technical now, but I think the point is you don't have to be really technically inclined, and you can learn these things on the internet or books at a pace that you're ready. I think the main thing is to just, at least for me, it is and was to just go out and shoot. I definitely shoot photos where my settings are not good. I have entered photo contests and done really well in them, or even, you know, won, and the settings were absolutely not ideal technically, but in the moment I had to move fast and, you know, I just didn't worry about it. It's better to get the shot because, you know, if an animal is flying, of course, with a bird, for example, as soon as you start changing your settings to get it, that's when the bird's going to fly away. So yeah, sometimes you just have to say, all right, just make sure bare minimum is what it is and then shoot the photo.
So obviously when you're in those situations and you realize, oh, this is a very fast paced environment, you do what you can to get the photo. And as you said, sometimes the settings are not perfect if you're letting the camera make some of those decisions, but yet those images will still go on to, you know, get accolades and, you know, win awards. What do you think it is about those images then, if it's not the technical side of photography that makes the image so powerful?
It's all about how you see the world, lighting and framing and what's happening, right? So if it's something taking place in nature, like, you know, an animal hunting another animal or, you know, whales socializing or whatever it is, sometimes that moment, that's what draws people in, right? Something that people can relate to or something that people haven't seen. Of course, as much as you can, it's good to get the settings right if you can, but that's not always the most important driving factor, right? Whether your ISO is a little higher than it should be or a little lower. There are people who are very, very rigid about their settings. I have a friend who's a fine art photographer and he's quite rigid about his settings, but he's also blowing up his pictures into these, you know, prints where just looking at every detail. And so it is more important in that scenario. Other people are just, you know, putting it online in a little tiny box on Instagram. You might not see the dynamic range or the noise as much in that kind of scenario. But the main thing is, you know, you're showing somebody a picture and trying to tell them a story or convey something in a very short moment from just one visual scene that doesn't move. So, you know, how you do that, it makes such a difference whether you are standing here, right? You can see the background, but if you move it like that, or you move it like that, it's a whole different thing. And you may not notice it right away, but your brain processes the lines and the shapes. And I would not take this as a photo. It's a terrible background. For those who can't see where I am, it's just like a jumble of lines and cables and things. But lighting is also is crucial. Beautiful light when the sun, you know, low light at sunset and you have this golden light, nice reflections. One way to think of it, I may be rambling here, but one way to think of it is also everything you see is a light source, right? So if you see a blueberry, that is not just a blueberry. That is a little tiny blue light, which is why your eyes see it as blue. While that might be a very minimal effect on something next to it, if you go in closer, let's say you have a blueberry and you have a little ant next to the blueberry and the sun is hitting the blueberry, but the ant is just next to it, but in the shade from something else, you have that ant is being covered in blue light, right? So if you're taking a close-up photo, that ant is going to be blue from the blueberry. That becomes an important light source. So if you start looking at the world like that, when you go in the shade, if you go under a tree in the shade on a nice sunny day with blue sky, your main light source was the sun. After you go in the shade, your main light source is now this big patch of blue sky. And so now you're covered in blue light, right? So if you start thinking in that way, in how you look at the world and how you take photos, that's going to have a bigger impact than if you learn what settings you should use technically in a certain scenario.
How long did it take you to realize this, that settings are important, but seeing the world with your own eyes is an entirely different skill set?
I'm still figuring it out.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. Well, I want to know back to when, you know, you got your camera, you started taking photos, people liked your images enough to offer to pay you to do work. When did you decide, you know what, I'm going to take my camera underwater. I'm going to take it to some strange places. We're not just going to be at a wedding, or we're not just going to be at the local park. We're going to go somewhere on an adventure with this camera.
So me and my brother had been wanting to take our cameras underwater for a long time. My parents are windsurfers, so we've spent a lot of time in Hawaii, which was very fortunate because it's a fantastic place for photography. So it was a good practice ground, spending time in Hawaii. Even when we had little tiny point-and-shoot cameras, 4 megapixel, you know, like me and my brother kept looking at the housing, the case, to put the camera in to be able to take it underwater. And it took so long to finally get one because we'd look at it and they're so expensive compared to the camera. They often cost as much as the camera does. And we're like, that's wow. So much money, you know. And it was, I think we had a $300 camera at the time, but you know, we were looking at it. We're like, $300. That's so much money. Cause we were kids, right? We're teenagers. And it took maybe 5 cameras later until I had a proper SLR, interchangeable lens, blah, 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 all the things that I finally was like, I have to get a housing for this camera. And that changed everything because then I started not just going to take photos underwater, but spending more time underwater because I would go to, well, I'm going to go and take photos of these turtles. And then I would end up going and looking around and seeing all these shapes. And that took me into the world of free diving and being underwater, which is a whole other environment to do photography. And the interesting and humbling thing is doing photography underwater is like starting again. It's like everything you knew before, you're starting again. So you have to be okay with being bad at something when you start underwater photography. Everything functions different. You know, you're in the water, which is not the element we normally spend our time in. And so, you know, you've got things going around you. You've got a mask. Maybe your mask is fogging up and, you know, you're also stuck to the surface. So you're like a bird, right? You're buoyant at the surface. And so you want to get down to a place below, but you're limited by your breath or your ability. And when you first start doing it, if you're not good in the water, it's a nightmare. You know, you have all this equipment, you got stuff like masks, you know, and you're just trying to figure it all out. But like with anything, the more time you spend with it, the more time you spend in the water, the better you get at being in the water and controlling where you want to be and how you want to do it and being comfortable. And the more time you spend with your underwater camera, then the better you get it as well. So my brain now operates with, it's as if I have 2 cameras, right? The one, the above water. And when I put it in the water, everything functions completely different. I use different settings. I use different modes. I shoot in a different style, you know, different on land, right? I use very precise pinpoint focus. Whereas underwater, depending what I'm doing, I might have the camera figure out where the focus is. So it's a whole different world, but it's also humans are incredible. We are very good at learning things if we are willing to learn them and not be frustrated by, you know, being new at something and having it be difficult. So we are capable of these kinds of things. It's just a matter of time spent and energy and willingness.
You know, obviously it's difficult down there. You're not getting photos that you thought that you would only because, you know, light is working different, buttons are different. What was it about those first photos that made you think, hold on, I need to stick with this. I really need to pursue this even more. There are 2 ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com and As a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
When you're underwater, you get to explore a three-dimensional space. So on land, we're stuck to the ground, right? We're basically, we call it gravity, right? You're stuck on the ground. You can even think of it like a magnet, right? You're magnetized to the ground. And then if you want to get higher, you have to physically climb up something or go up a hill. Underwater, initially, you're stuck to the surface, right? Because you're buoyant, you're trying not to drown. But as you get more comfortable in the water, you can, you know, wear a weight belt to make your buoyancy neutral. And so what happens is you open up this world where you can move in three dimensions. So it feels like you're in space and you can move around in three dimensions. And then all the animals are basically flying, right? You have a turtle that goes by you and it's got these wings and it flaps the wings, right? Or a whale that comes past you and it looks like a spaceship. And lighting as well functions differently. So something like a whale, they're so big that from the top of the whale to the bottom of the whale, the lighting is different. And as you go underwater, the deeper you go, you start to lose colors. So it also, the light breaks up differently. You know, at the top, the light might be harsh, but as you go down, it breaks up into these beautiful beams, but you still get soft light. And so when you take a photo, it's just this complex environment where you get so many different things going on at the same time of these strange creatures that are flying, and then you can fly and you feel like you're in space and everything's blue to begin with. And so it's just a complicated, challenging place to work. But the result is that you end up with these beautiful photos of things and places that most people haven't seen. And to be able to open up that world for people who aren't able to go there is a really satisfying and special thing. For me, one of my goals is, I know that not everybody has the chance. Most people don't get to go and see a volcano or, you know, go underwater with these animals or to all of these, you know, far reaching places. And so for me, my goal becomes do the best job I can to show these beautiful places so that I can share that with people, because most people have all kinds of responsibilities or, you know, things that keep them working a job or taking care of family, or, you know, they don't have the financial opportunity to travel. And so if I can show those places to people so that they can gain a better appreciation for this planet, for the wildlife, for the nature, and hopefully some good can come from that, then I feel like I've done my job. And underwater is a place where very few people go. Most people's interaction with the beach, the sea, the ocean, is laying on the beach and roasting in the sun, which is a wonderful thing. But there's this whole other world down there. And it's not easy to access, even if you have the time and the means and the money to do it. You still have to physically get down there. Yeah, it's just showing a different world. And it's the same thing with macro photography, with little bugs and little creatures. We're going out and photographing wildlife, is that most people aren't seeing that every day. And so you get people who are commit their lives to it, like the filmmakers that work on these BBC productions, wildlife nature productions, and spend years trying to film something so that the common person can watch and see and appreciate.
Yeah. And really the goal of those, say documentaries, spending that much time to, you know, photograph something that's interesting really is, as you said, kind of to bring awareness of any sort of issues that could be going on, through conservation effort. So for you, when did photography turn from, I'm just going to take pretty pictures with my Casio point and shoot here, to I'm going to use my camera as a means to share this message with the world for marine conservation?
It didn't happen overnight. It wasn't all of a sudden, but bit by bit, you know, as we've been living in this world and seeing animals going extinct, rainforests burning down, as the awareness started to come about in my own life, I realized that I need to do more than just take pretty photos. And so I started to focus, still trying to make beautiful pictures, but with a bit more of a story and a bit more of a focus on it. And so you can become really depressed by this, or you can try and use this and say, well, all right, what can I do to at least do my part to shape people's view of this place, to try and pressure politicians and to try and make life choices? So once I started realizing this, and still am constantly learning, I thought, well, what can I do best? And for me, my best medium is through telling stories and imagery. It's so important to take photos and videos of the destruction and the things that are going wrong to show people. And when the opportunity is there, I do. But I find that people and myself, I react better to positivity and to beauty. And so I try and focus my efforts on showing a beautiful place and saying, look how amazing this is. Look at this animal. And so the people will fall in love with it. And then from there, that paired with learning about the issues that are surrounding it and all the other work that people are doing to bring light to the destruction and the problems, I think that that's a piece that is needed. And so that's where I find my work is best suited, is to try and create that love and appreciation so that the next steps can be taken. So we've got more work to do. And as we go, I focus more time and effort in that. And I've got some projects in the works to try and expedite that a little bit. But that's the general goal, is to push more towards conservation photography, to tell those stories, and to show, you know, how precious this place we live on is.
Did you just put the whole weight of the world's problems on your own shoulders right there, like through your photographs? You're like, I haven't been able to solve these problems yet in my relatively short period of time of just being on this earth with my images. I think you're right. Like, it is this global consciousness that needs to happen. It can't happen just on your shoulders. But obviously, you are taking you're making an effort to bring awareness to these causes. So when it comes to the photography side, how is conservation photography, from a technical standpoint, different than something of, say, like a photo that me or maybe another listener might take of a dolphin or a lion? Like, what is it that's different for you about taking those images?
You know, honestly, you taking a photo of a dolphin can do as much or more than if I spend months trying to tell a story about dolphins and dolphin conservation. It depends on what it is. It depends on how it reaches people, what the message is. There are some fantastic conservation photographers that go and find the human animal nature connection and put it all together. That's something that I try to do, but it is difficult to tell those stories in an impactful way that, you know, doesn't just push people away. But some of it is, you know, the message and how you output it. If you go to a place like SeaWorld or one of these places where they have dolphin prisoners, and you take a photo with the dolphin and you're like, yeah, it's me and my dolphin friend, that is not good, right? Because you've got a captive dolphin. But that's going to tell a message as well, right? And so seeing places like that is important for people to realize. A lot of us are unaware of what's going on, right? I went to SeaWorld as a kid. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. Now I think very different of that, you know? And so it's important to educate people, to let people know so that they can, and to try and change people's perspective. So one way to do that is to show, you know, look at this miserable dolphin. It's in this dolphin prison. And, you know, hopefully people can see. But it's also important to show a photo of a dolphin, right? Like if you go out and take a photo of a dolphin and it's playing with a leaf, that's important too, because then you show people, look how intelligent these creatures are. Look at the personality they have. Look at the culture that they have. And that can then change people's perspective to realize then when they go and see a dolphin in a dolphin prison, they think, why do we have this dolphin in this little concrete swimming pool? Right. So we can all do conservation photography, even with our phones in our own backyards. And that's something I think we neglect to see, as we think like it has to be this person that goes out and photographs this grand story. But you can also just go in your garden and photo, be like, look at this cool bug that I found. But yeah, anybody can do conservation photography. It's just a matter of telling the stories of the nature and animals around them. And we all have nature around us, whether that is in a little garden or in a park or, you know, bugs, lizards, little creatures, things like that. You don't have to go across the world on a safari in Africa to do conservation photography.
Now, I know that today you do a lot of swimming with dolphins, or no, I'm sorry, swimming with whales, right? Going underwater, photographing whales. You even take others on expeditions to explore and photograph whales as well. What is it about whales that is so intriguing to you to bring more awareness to them?
Whales are beautiful. They are incredible creatures. They're massive. And they're very important they play an important role in our ecosystem. They are the biggest creatures that have ever lived, and they feed on these tiny, tiny little animals. And they do a lot as far as moving carbon around, you know, taking it from the top and putting it down to the bottom of the ocean. But they're also incredibly beautiful, and, they are a bit of a symbol for the health of our oceans and for nature. And they also, I have found, are a gateway into changing people's perspective about the ocean and nature. When people swim with whales, that can change their life. It has changed my life. It, you know, being in front of this giant animal that is not at all stupid. They're very, very intelligent, and being in their presence, it really does change something around you. It feels like when you're in the water with whales, it feels like you are amongst the gods. Like you have this incredible thing. And then sometimes they'll come right up to you, because they are not just simple beasts that are trying to eat and mate. They're also curious and playful. But they're not all curious and playful. Like people, they have a huge range of personalities and also moods. So you might have a whale that is interested in playing at one moment, but not interested in another moment. It's curious. It's, you know, sleeping. It's resting. It's going and doing stuff. It's, some of them are more social. So that their personalities and moods are all different. And you, the more time you spend with them, the more time you see them as very sentient, intelligent beings. They are incredible to look at. They're incredible to interact with. And so you have this animal, sometimes the size of a bus or bigger if it's a blue whale. And you have this animal that will sometimes then come right up to you, like to your face, and go and swim around you and play. And I have found that this is the fastest way to connect people to the ocean. Then they can start to care about other things. Weight, you know, what kind of fish or what kind of sea creatures am I eating that, you know, might be ruining coral reefs or certain areas? How is my life affecting the health of our planet? And while it's not necessarily everybody's individual responsibility to take the burden of everything on them, changing people's perspectives and opinions. You don't know who they are or who they know and how that might affect, you know, how we go about life and the decisions that we make and who we vote for and how we pressure our politicians and what we buy and voting with our dollar. So that's one aspect of swimming with whales and taking people swimming with whales. For me, I'm also on a lifelong mission of documenting the lives of whales because I find them to be incredible. So I run these trips in order to take people, both to show them the whales and to get them in the water with whales, and as an opportunity for me to spend as much time as I can photographing whales, because you only get little glimpses into their lives. And so to get the full picture, you have to spend so much time on boats, just looking at blue water, waiting, looking for whales. You get in, whale doesn't want to interact. So you go and you find other whales. And then you get these moments where you find whales that are very interested. And then you have these amazing opportunities to document. And so that's what I'm trying to do, is tell the whole story and the whole picture so that people can appreciate, so that people can see, you know, look at these animals that are multifaceted. They fight, they play, they care for their young, they're emotional, they're intelligent, and they are the biggest creatures we've ever had, which is amazing to think that like blue whales are bigger than the biggest dinosaurs that have ever lived.
So when you go and swim with these whales, right, they're very large animals. I guess, first of all, real quick, about on average, how much time do you have with your camera underwater photographing whales? Is this like, there it comes, there it goes, or is it 20, 30 minutes?
Sometimes it's exactly that. The whale just passes and you're like, cool.
Wow.
And it goes. Other times you can have, you know, multiple hours just nonstop. If you have a calf that is, calf is like a baby whale, and it's confident and playful, you can have this mother that is sleeping, resting, and some of them are really easygoing. So if you have a mother that is really easygoing and a calf that is really playful, and it makes sense that some mother whales would be very protective of their calves, but it also makes some sense that some are like, you're fine, because the whale, a calf, is about the size of a car. Yeah. So, you know, if you are calm and respectful and there's only a few of you and you move slowly and you let it be on their terms and the mother is okay with it and lets the calf come and play with you, sometimes then it can go on for, you know, it can just keep going on and on and on and on. It's funny because the calves find people very entertaining because they are clumsy. You know, they're young and they're clumsy and they're like, wow, look at this thing. But the adults, we are not as entertaining, because as good as we get in the water, we're still not that good in the water. We're not that fast. We can't hold our breaths for that long. When you compare to something like dolphins, you may be playing with adult whales, and then as soon as dolphins show up, they don't care about you anymore. And you see, like, the dolphins will, they can spin around and go on the nose and swim around the whale. And it's just far more entertaining. So we are like bath toys for the baby humpback whales. So very entertaining for the calves, and maybe mildly entertaining for the adults. But some adults are very playful as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's too funny. So while you're down there and you're photographing these whales, if you don't know how much time you have, what images do you need to walk away with from a session with whales to be happy? How do you ensure that you get that with these wild animals?
Oh, sometimes I don't even bring my camera in the water. I just go to look at them and just go and experience it, which is another important thing that we sometimes forget to do as photographers. We're so focused on looking through the viewfinder that we don't put it down and look at the thing with our eyes. And I don't know if you've seen, there's this great scene from Walter Mitty where the guy doesn't even take the photo, which is ridiculous. But yeah, anyway,
the snow leopard, right?
Yeah, snow leopard. He doesn't even take the photo. I would, you know, take a photo, but then also look with my eyes, because it's important to also you know, see and connect with what you're photographing and experience it as well. But then of course you say like, oh, it's so good, I got to take a photo. So you take a photo and you're like, I should look at it. And you bring the camera down and then you bring the camera back up. So when I go and photograph whales, I don't ever go in with like, I must get this shot, because you can't control, you can't predict, it's nature. You can only just, it's a good exercise in working with whatever is available. And so if you go in with this, like, I must get this shot, then often what happens is you might push boundaries, and you don't want to disturb nature. It's one of the main things when you're doing wildlife photography is to minimize, and conservation photography is like, minimize your impact and disturbance. The ideal scenario is to film it in its natural behavior. Of course, when a humpback whale comes to play with you, that's not like its natural behavior, but it is also, you know, there's not many instances in which you can interact with a wild animal in a respectful, consensual, safe way. And underwater animals is actually one of the few scenarios where you do have these animals that are intelligent and curious enough to come and play with you. And if you think about like, how ridiculous would it be to be on a safari and get out of the car to like get amongst lions while they were fighting? Oh, yeah, no, like it would be absurd and you would die. But somehow you could do that in the ocean, right? You can be like, oh, cool, there's sharks there. And then you get in the water with the sharks, or like you, it's wild.
It sounds wild. It's something that I have not tried, but it's one of those, I think, as you said earlier, like, because the ocean is so unexplored, I guess, by many people's interaction is just going to the beach and just laying out, that when I look at your photos, I know, I feel like there's a sense of connection between me and whatever this animal is, even though I'm not there. And I think that that's really strong and that's really powerful and something that I would love to try one day, obviously in a safe manner. I feel like I've already taken up like too much of your time. I have a million more questions for you. But I'll ask you one more question here, because I find this interesting. And that is, on your website, I see that it says that you list photos, video, drone, and VR. I really want to know about that VR aspect. What is it about VR? Is it just that it's more immersive and it helps?
VR does not play a big role in my life, to be honest. I try and...
You're dipping your toes.
Yeah. When I first started photography, people would tell me, like, you got to focus on one thing. You shouldn't do all these different things. And I was like, I don't want to, like, I get it, what you're saying, but I don't want to do that. I want to photograph people. I want to photograph wildlife and nature and stars and all kinds of just like everything. And so whenever something new comes around that seems interesting, I will try that as well. And when VR was becoming a thing, when it first kind of started, I thought, well, you know, I should do this as well. And I work as on a film team. And so we got into the VR thing. I think VR will be much better for video games, for, you know, that kind of educational tools, that kind of thing. It's not that good for photography and video, but it is a whole different way of operating, thinking, filming. And so over the course of time, I learned how to do it. And so I guess I just put it there on my website. I was like, well, I know how to do VR. So it is one way to tell a story. It's just currently not very good. I think it will be better when you have 3D VR cameras, when the stitching technology gets better. Where I have seen that it is good for is actually conservation stories that involve the work that people do, because then you can be immersed in an environment, and that's amazing. And underwater, it is also interesting because you can have animals here and here and here. But the technology isn't quite there yet. It's not something I focus a heavy amount of time on. I spend more time, you know, filming with drones, which is similar to being underwater. You have three-dimensional movement. You can be above, you can be in the middle. So I focus most of my time on photo and video and drone and underwater and wildlife and nature. But I like to be able to do a variety of things.
I'm right there with you in terms of the technology is just not there yet, which is so unfortunate because I really want to know what's next in photography, right? There was photos and then video came along and suddenly those pictures could move. And I really want to know what's next and I really want to be there for it. And I think the VR is it, but you're right. The technology is just not there yet, which is so unfortunate. But I think that when it does get there, and I sell this to my clients all the time, is like, how cool would it be to put on some sort of headset or, you know, whatever the technology is, and literally just relive your wedding day, you know, be able to look around, be able to, you know, explore that day again and again. And everybody thinks that that's a fantastic idea. It's just getting it to work is not there yet. We are at the end of our questions here. I do want to be mindful of your time. And because of the time zone difference, it's almost time for me to pick up my kids. They're done for the day with school. Whereas, you know, over in Hawaii, they're just getting started. So before I let you go, Kareem, I got to know, where can listeners follow you online, see more of your work, and follow along on your conservation journey?
I have a website. I also have all of the social media outlets, Instagram, Facebook, all of those things. I also have a newsletter, which I'm trying to put more time into and do a bit more of. Google, you can just Google my name. I'm on the internet.
I've got three lessons that I want to share with you from this interview with Kareem. But first, if you like this interview and you like the idea of using your camera to help bring awareness to wildlife conservation, then be sure to check out my interview with photographer Rory Gallitz, who chases polar bears in the Arctic to photograph them and then share them with the world. Really awesome stuff. Sounds super cool. So again, to hear that, to hear more of that interview, then check out interview 143 with Rory Gallitz. So as I mentioned, I had three takeaways from this interview with Kareem. The first one is just to embrace imperfections. Kareem shared, you know, that he's had success with some technically imperfect photos. And I think that that really highlights the importance of capturing the moment and focusing on telling a story through your photos rather than, you know, always striving for technical perfection, which I understand that is much easier to try to achieve because you know what technical perfection looks like, whereas you don't always know what your subject is going to do, what moment is going to be in front of the camera. But if you can try to learn how the emotional impact of an image, you know, resonates with the viewer, you're going to see that it surpasses technical perfection every single time. That's why I say moment matters most. Takeaway number two is respect and responsibility. Kareem talked a lot about respecting the wildlife and minimizing your disturbance while still being able to capture images. You have to know the ethical considerations of wildlife and conservation photography before you do it. You know, understanding the impact that you have as a human being in nature is essential for, you know, capturing photos with integrity. You know, what good is it to share a photo of one of these majestic whales in the hopes of protecting, you know, their territory or their home? If you were frantic in the water and you end up scaring them, or, you know, if you did something to ruin the place yourself, like what would be the point? You have to respect and you got to be responsible. Takeaway number three is to understand the impact of lighting. Kareem highlighted here the significance of understanding your light source in photography and how that influences your subject in the image, right? So since many of you may not be shooting whales or underwater, see how you can start to use light and find the importance of mastering lighting technique to bring focus to your subjects. That is it. I want to invite you to share your biggest takeaway with me and the rest of the community in the free and private Beginner Photography Podcast community, where you can connect with others along with share your ideas and ask questions too. So come join us over at beginnerphotopod.com/group. That's it for this week. Until next week, remember, the more that you shoot today, the better of a photographer you will be tomorrow. Talk soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.